There are a few things that I would like to pick up on in this rather lengthy reading from the Gospel of John. A relatively famous story, the woman at the well, the woman of Samaria. And I'm going to come back to it in a minute. But first, I want us just to remember what it was really like for Jesus to be encountering not just a woman, but a woman of Samaria. And again, that's an ancient sort of hostility. I've been thinking of it. It's sort of as if you combined elements of our own civil war, but had no victory in which the two sides were reconciled. The civil war in Israel resulted in a breaking of the northern kingdom from the southern kingdom. And then you get religious controversy as well, sort of like in the Protestant Reformation, where you would have really intense divisions between those who remained Roman Catholic and those who were Protestant. And so you've got this really intense enmity of people of Israel and the people of Samaria, and then you've got all of the taboos that were in place for Jesus speaking in public to a woman. And, you know, I think you can get some feel for what things were like then if you sort of summon in your imagination the kinds of limitations that are on women now in certain Muslim countries, and the scandal that would be occasioned by public conversation between a man and a woman, as well as the kind of tinderbox hostilities that still characterize the Middle East. So we'll get back to that in a minute. I want to start with just, it's kind of a small issue, and yet it's a huge issue. And it's an issue of translation, and I pass this on to you mostly because scholars that I respect so much say this is a really important thing. We keep doing this, and why do we keep doing this? And what do? There's a passage in the letter we heard from Romans today. I need my glasses. Much more surely then, now that we have been justified by his blood, will we be saved through him, and then the phrase, from the wrath of God. Except the Greek doesn't say wrath of God. It just says wrath. And so translators have been supplying the of God for quite a while. And it makes a huge difference. Now, one of the things that is a recurring theme in the Old Testament especially is that when God wants really to wash his hands of someone, God lets them go on their own ways, unimpeded, just lets them go and wander lost. And I think it's important for us, and this group of scholars, their central preoccupation is really to say, we keep attributing violence to God, like wrath of God, punishment, theory of atonement, where he had to kill Jesus. We keep attributing violence to God, and in so doing, we blind ourselves to the reality that it's our violence. We keep holding God responsible. It is our violence. And so I think the issue that is really being put before us in Romans is, we as a human species are going to have to figure out ways genuinely to deal with our conflicts. We're going to have to figure out really how to love each other, because the violence is going to get worse. And who does not feel that? The whole world feels like it's kind of trembling in this instability and this, you know, again, tinderbox, like it's going to erupt in violence. Well, that's us doing that to ourselves. That is not God punishing us. It's not the wrath of God. It is us living out the consequences of our own blind and inattentive behavior. So, again, it seems like a small issue, but it's really important that we stop attributing our violence to God. Yeah, it's just, it confuses us in some of the profoundest ways possible. So, Enough of the translation. One of the things I wanted to pick up on in the story of the woman at the well, and it's a funny thing, I thought this was going to be the easiest thing to talk about when I started thinking about the lessons. It's that religious dispute. We believe that we are to worship on the mountain, said the Protestants. And you think you are to worship in Jerusalem, he said to the Roman Catholic. He says, what do you think, Jesus? And Jesus says, neither one of those distinctions is absolute. But what God really wants, for God is spirit, and God wants people to worship in spirit and in truth. And, I thought I was going to have something quite dramatic to say about the way that that might cause us to reconsider our own patterns of worship. And yet the longer I sat with it, the more problematic and sort of mysterious it became. What does it mean to worship in spirit and truth? One thing that seems to be suggested is that human groups tend to think that their way of worshiping is the right way, or the only way. And it even gets so bad that if someone dares to worship in a different way, that's the occasion for violence and warfare and persecution. And Jesus is clearly saying, whatever you think of your human ways of worship, none of them is absolute. Not one of them is absolute. And so you are going to have to find ways that overcome, again, this basic tribal mentality that says our way is the only way. And there is only one way, I think, but it's God's way. And that would require us to go to that place in our hearts where we understand that we are connected with each other and with God through God's creation. And we worship out of that place, the place that begins in the recognition that we are all, and in a quite literal sense, we are all one family. We share a common parent. We share a common source. And I think that worshiping from that place of recognition comes closer to what Jesus might have meant by worshiping in spirit and truth. But again, I think that's one of those things where there is no one right answer. What does Jesus mean by worshiping in spirit and in truth? Well, that's what we ponder. And, that's what, like a vestry will come together and say, well, how are we doing worshiping in spirit and truth? Do the forms of our worship reflect that? And with our new understanding that not one form of worship is absolute, then how do we go about responsibly and with humility changing the forms of our worship? So that's work that lies ahead. I want to talk a little bit about the woman too, because I think in her we see a really fundamental element of the Christian experience. I think the living water that Jesus is talking about also has to do with that sense that I'm connected from within, that I share a sense of connection with all the rest of creation. When you really begin to experience that, I think that's what Jesus is talking about as living water. But the thing that I'm sure I've said this before, but it bears repeating. You have to imagine this woman. Think of women, first of all, and a rather challenged social status to begin with. And then you get a woman of 2,000 years ago living in a little village, been married 5 times, now living with someone not her husband. I see some of you grimacing in moral reprobate. Who is that woman? And you can kind of imagine that her life has not been the easiest. She's not exactly a pillar of her community. She has probably known shame. She's known judgment. She's been ostracized. Think of how many of the good citizens of Sychar you know, look down their nose at this woman. And the crux of this encounter and what sends her into the town is, I met a man and he told me everything I ever did. And I'm okay. He told me everything I ever did, and I'm okay. In his presence, I don't feel ashamed. I don't feel judged. I don't feel like I need to run away from my own experience. I don't need to feel ashamed of my own experience. I can stand, you know, on my own two feet. And it doesn't mean, this man that I'm encountering is not saying that everything I've done is okay. He's not judging me positively or negatively. He's not saying you're good. He's just saying you are. And I love you. My very presence, the very way that I'm encountering you, I love you. And just as you are, you're okay. Whatever your past has included, you're still okay. And you can begin to live your life from this very moment with your slate wiped completely clean. You are completely accepted just as you are. And as I say, I think this is pretty close to the real crux of the Christian experience. To know that we are accepted and loved just as we are. Not as a positive judgment, you're good, but rather as a recognition that you exist and that your life, and you know, as we say in so many ways, God makes all things new. But we so rarely think to apply that to ourselves, where this really is the newness of the day that God has made. And so, for that Samaritan woman to stand in the truth of her own life and not be annihilated by it, not be ashamed, not feel judged, but feel for the first time in perhaps decades that she could stand up and speak and have a place in her own community. She reminds me a little bit of a change that I've noticed at Easter time, where we leave Peter in the garden saying, I don't know who Jesus is. I don't know the man. I don't know him. I don't like him. I don't want anything to do with him. Go away from me. And by Easter Sunday morning, Peter has recovered his presence, and he's saying, I've been commissioned by the risen Christ to go and tell the story. Well, but the Samaritan woman, you know, she's kind of there, kind of by herself, and now she goes in, and she becomes a figure of her town again. And she has a place, and she says, I met a man, and he told me everything I ever did, and I'm okay. I'm okay. I have been brought back to myself, and that sense that I am okay, and that whatever my life has included, I am loved by God. I am going to drink of the truth of that every day for the rest of my life. That the truth of that will refresh me every day. For I now have that living water. I know where I can go to find it. And the truth of that water, the quenching of it, is that I am radically okay, loved by God just as I am. Now, can my life from this point on reflect that? Can I live into the truth of how I am loved and accepted? Can I let my life reflect that? Or am I going to continue living as someone who is ashamed and frightened and guilty? The Christian path is so connected to that initial encounter. We say it, you know, from whom all, you know, all hearts are open, from whom no secrets are hid. We talk a lot about being transparent to God, but we don't enough take upon ourselves the real gift of that. Because, I mean, it can sound very frightening to have some presence that knows every secret of our life. And then if we just realize that every secret of our life is known, and we're loved anyway.